From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made next month when local voters head to the polls casting their ballots in a number of races, including, likely where you are, the New York State Assembly. And today we continue our series of conversations with the candidates that you're going to see on the ballot. This hour will be divided into two parts, and we are going to begin with a look at District number 137 in the New York State Assembly. It includes parts of Rochester and Gates. And the candidate joining us this hour is the Republican in that race. Marcus C. Williams is back with us. First of all, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me, Evan. It's such a pleasure to be here.
The Republican in the race is Marcus. The Democrat in the race, Damon Meeks, is the incumbent. And it was the incumbent's choice not to come on this program together with his opponent. That was not your choice, Marcus.
I did desperately try to get on here with him, but he continued to refuse.
So here we are. We've had to divide the hour, and it's nice to have Marcus with us. You can hear the conversation with his opponent, incumbent Damon Meeks, by visiting our website, wxxinews.org/connections. You can also read more about this race in the WXXI Election Guide, which is really filled with great information at wxxinews.org. Not your first race that you've run, but this is a chance to introduce or reintroduce yourself to listeners. Tell them a little bit about yourself and why you are running, Marcus.
Hello, everybody. My name is Marcus C. Williams. My website is www.marcus4rochester.com. That's Marcus4rochester.com. I'm running for the 137th New York State Assembly District, which covers the majority of the city and the whole town of Gates. I'm running because I've lived in my district pretty much my whole life, and I don't like the direction that we're going. We're seeing continued issues with not just crime, but we're seeing economic issues, the cost of housing, the cost of food. Everything keeps going in a direction that's not so good for us. We even see education just going to the lowest level, and just it's aggressively, what's happening is aggressively counterproductive to what we need to be empowering our community to build a better future and creating more opportunities for everyone. And I'm just tired of everything that's coming out of Albany without the level of advocacy that we need from elected officials, specifically in my district. I don't believe that we should be kowtowing to leadership that's coming out of New York City. I believe that we need real representation in Rochester that's from Rochester, that's willing to stand up, even if it is to buck their own party.
So what is an example of the kind of stuff that's, as you say, coming out of Albany that does not represent what Rochester needs?
So it's I could talk about funding all day long and the taxes. We could talk about that all day long. But specifically for my district, we have the most violent crime and we have the most drug overdoses, not just in the county, but in the state outside of New York City. And honestly, that's only because it's more densely populated in New York City, which is extremely concerning that this has been going on for years and it's never really had an issue addressed. Because it's like people know that it's a problem, but you're not putting forth legislation to work on that, or you're not fixing legislation that's already there that's not helping. So we have to return a focus here. Because, I mean, just look, you are in part of my district, and I'm sure you drive to work.
I do.
So you can see how the buildings and the stuff in the neighborhoods have gone over the years. A lot of them have started to decay and become decrepit. You'd say that there's great investment coming because there's so much construction even outside your window, which is nice when that's a capital investment. But when we're struggling in the community with simple everyday issues, like I could go on about healthcare, I could go on about housing, but really, New York City, they have these concepts that are disseparate from the rest of upstate New York. If it was up to me, really, we'd function as two separate types of parts of the state. We'd have our own autonomy up here because what would be passed up here wouldn't be what's passed down there.
So take me through priorities 1, 2, and 3. If you're elected, what's the first thing that you'd like to see? And again, I understand you'd be in a legislative minority.
Yes.
But I apologize to listeners. They're going to keep hearing me say this. We're going to ask questions based on what each party and each set of candidates wants to accomplish under the assumption that things could change. It feels like this is a blue state and sort of entrenched, But California voted for Jimmy Carter and voted for the Republican in 1976. Yeah. Texas voted for Jimmy Carter in 1976. It wasn't that long ago that the map looked totally different. So it could change. And if you are in with a legislative majority and you can get a lot done, or even if you can't, what is the first project you want to work on? What's the first piece of legislation? What's the first change you want to see come out of Albany?
So I'd say this. So first off, I'd encourage any of your listeners, if they're Democrat or independent, that you got to know, in this general election, you can vote for anybody on any party line, even a Republican. And I'd encourage you to vote for me. I'm not asking you to vote for anybody else on the line or even anybody else on the ballot anywhere. But do consider voting for me, and hopefully I can earn your vote. My first legislative priority immediately would be to work on amending bail reform and raise the age. I know you talked last week about bail reform a lot with the current member of the assembly, but bail reform is a issue, but it's not as big an issue as raise the age. And now raise the age, for people that don't understand what it is, it's if anybody's under the age of 18, they're considered a juvenile. So that means that no matter how they could commit 50, 60, 70 crimes, they're not fingerprinted. They don't have any mugshots. So you never really can say that they did anything specifically. It also goes to family court and it doesn't go to regular court, which is a whole separate issue. And since I don't have enough time here, I won't go too in depth with it. But essentially what it does is when anybody in that age range is in a crime, for the most part, they cannot be held at all regardless. They have to be released either on their own recognizance
or to a
parent.
Well, it's about trying as an adult versus trying as a juvenile.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
That doesn't mean that there's no consequences.
Well, the thing is that those type of things, like, again, it goes to family court. So the what they can do is different. And again, I don't want to bog. I'd love to talk about this at
but
length.
But you would want to see raise the age rolled back, essentially changing the age of adult criminal responsibility from 18 to 16?
So you remember when we had those kids that set that man on fire, the veteran? You remember that?
Yep.
They were all under that age range, so they would be treated as minors even though they did something so heinous as that. Now, this is a very serious concern because we continue to see repeat offenders that are under the age of 18 over and over and over again. And if you've had your car stolen or if you've had your home broken into, most likely they're in that age range. They're known to the police, but they're not able to hold them because of the age range and the way the laws are structured. There's about four or five other laws that go along with that in the state that I am not able to, I just don't have the time to talk about, but I'd love to at some other point. But because there are just so many issues in our community, and I'd like to go on to the other parts.
All right, so let me just press one other point on car thefts.
Yes.
So your opponent in this race, Demond Meeks.
Well, I also don't forget the car jackings, which are skyrocketing, even the commercial car jackings. So we've seen them steal multiple UPS trucks. We've seen them steal the mail carrier's truck. There was just a commercial truck stolen last night. It's on the news today. You guys can go look it up.
So I want to ask about the approach that has been taken over the last year.
Yes.
And where you are with this. So your opponent in the race talked about the JEDS program. It's a juvenile diversion program.
That's the county. That's not the state. That's got nothing to do with him. It should not be talked about when we're talking about state-level priorities. It's a great program. Don't get it twisted. They don't have the resources that they need. That's another issue for JEDS.
But can the state come through with more resources for JEDS?
See, but that's not the conversation. They can, yes. And I do believe that there should be some budgetary funding allocated for that program. I do think that the program is a step in the right direction. I really do. But they just don't have – so they're like – he said last week there's like 1% recidivism rate. But they don't have hardly that many people in there, and they don't actually keep a close enough eye on them.
So you question
because
the data?
They don't have –
You don't think the data he said was
the data is segmented and parsed out in a way in which it is falsely representative of the truth. So it doesn't mean that the data isn't the data. When you cherry pick data, that's what you end up getting. Because I know for a fact, I've gone to the different, what do you call them, forums and stuff like that with the people that are very pro all of this criminal justice reform, if that's what we're going to call it. I got other thoughts on what it should actually be called, okay? But they support these things, and I ask questions because I want to know. I don't know everything. And I want to see somebody else's point of view, especially if it might be something different than my own. So I asked them, and they said, well, they really can't access all of the people that would need these services, so they've got a drop in the bucket of the number of offenders that are actually out here committing the crimes. So, and that is a problem.
So what is another solution to the crimes? It sounds to me like you want to roll back bail reform.
Amend, not roll back. I didn't say that.
Okay, so amend bail reform.
Yes.
Do you want more discretion for judges? Do you want a dangerousness standard?
So here's the issue with the judges issue. And I don't want to stay on this whole thing for a long time because we only have a limited time and I could talk all day about it. With the discretion for the judges, the issues is that the judges can only do up to the letter of the law. And I need you guys to understand that if you're listening, they can only do up to the letter of the law, which means that if the law says that you release the people, you release the people. If the law says that you hold the people, then you hold the people. So if you have an issue with judges releasing people, then the law needs to say that it needs to hold people. And whatever the course is that they decide on whether what part of the law should be adjusted for that is something separate. I don't think that judicial discretion is the whole issue. Yes, I believe there should be judicial discretion. Should there be more? Yes, I do think they should also be able to consider more things. Again, this is a very long conversation. But at the end of the day, what a lot of people that are it's hard to say because judges are elected too, and that's a whole nother very serious issue that we need to have a conversation around. What happens when you are part of a party that will definitely say, oh, well, if you're bucking the party, we'll run somebody against you or we'll make your life hard because of that. So what I've heard a lot of people saying that they want that are in those type of positions are they want mandatory minimums. I'm not a mandatory minimum person, but it's not that they want mandatory minimums. It's that what they want is the responsibility taken off of their shoulders because they feel pressure from outside forces to release these people for their own safety and position.
All right, we're talking to Marcus C. Williams, who is running for New York State Assembly, has some very different views than his opponent, Damon Meeks, who declined an invitation to come on this program with Marcus C. Williams. So we're interviewing them separately, doing the best we can with that. I want to ask you about poverty. And
yes.
Damon Meeks is one of a number of New York State Assembly members who helped support $750,000 from New York State to continue ongoing operations for RMAPI, the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative.
Well, what's it done?
Would you have supported $750,000 for RMAPI this year?
Well, I'd have to take a whole look cohesively on what other programs are out there and stuff like that. That might also, I know RMAPI, but I don't know what other, I know like three or four other small programs that are out there, but I don't know if there's any other ones, maybe other people have ideas or stuff like that, so I don't want to say.
Okay, fair enough. But
let me answer the question. So to better answer your question, I'd say this. What's happened in Rochester is the poverty hasn't decreased really at all. So it's gone from 33% 2 years ago, and now they're like, oh, well, it's 31%. I said, that's people moving and people dying. Like, there's no change there. Like, you're not being real with yourself. The actual underlying issues involving poverty are not being addressed, which are the decrepit school system we have that doesn't prioritize education, which doesn't prioritize job placement and job training, okay? So we're here, we're sitting here in a community that is deprived. People like to use these words, white privilege and systematic injustice and all of these things. I'm not here to try to make you feel bad for people that are working class or in poverty. I'm here to set the record straight for what's actually going on. The school system is rigged against the community, and they get the second most amount of funding in the nation, $1.4 billion. We pay more than every school district around per pupil, and we are getting substandard quality. We are the second highest funded school district in the nation, and we are the second lowest performing school district in the nation. Somebody's got to make that make sense, because that means that it's not about the money. That means it's about what's actually being taught and the quality there. To tie that into the poverty situation, if you're graduating and you're functionally illiterate, you can't read, you can't write, and you can't do basic math, what job opportunities are there for you? And then that also, too, feeds into crime. So when we're talking about poverty, we're throwing all of this money around, but it's not actually addressing any of the real core issues. And still, somehow, poverty is still essentially at the same levels.
Would you like to see the state cut the funding for the RCSD? Reduce the funding for schools?
Oh, listen. I have a look. That's a whole episode unto itself.
Well, so can you try to answer?
I'm going to try to answer. Right. Yeah. So, the budget for the Rochester City School District needs to have at least earmarks on it. This is the money. This is what the money is going to. And we are going to make sure that you are spending the money and you're not missing tens of millions of dollars every year or overspending $30 million that you didn't have to begin with, that's a whole separate conversation. How did that even ever happen? Okay. But every year they're missing tens of millions of dollars. Nobody can account for it. Nobody can tell you where it went. Every couple of years we get an auditor that comes from the state. We fail every single time. What is going on with the money? People will tell you that it's not being stolen. There's no way in the universe that it's not being squandered and put into somebody's cousin's pockets or somebody's friend's
stuff.
Do you
have any evidence of that? That's a pretty serious allegation.
Where's the money though, Evan? I don't need to say that this is the hard evidence on it when the money is missing. If the money is missing, the money just into the air? Come on now. You're very intelligent, man. I know you don't believe that.
So let me ask you a different way then. Because you're pointing to the academic results of the district, which are very low.
Yes.
And the spending per pupil,
yes,
which is comparatively high.
Yes.
It is not a surprise to me that high poverty districts need more money, need more support, because your conclusion is, well, the issue is what they're teaching in the classroom.
Yes, 100%.
There's a massive rate of truancy. Kids not even going to school because there's high homelessness rates, there's family dysfunction.
Well, why aren't we putting money into truancy then?
I think they are spending some on that. No?
Listen, we haven't had when I was in school in RCSD, they actually had truancy officers. They actually really tried to engage in the families. But that's why we see people going into charter schools and stuff like that, because they're trying to make sure that they hold this stuff up. And charter schools operate on a fraction of the budget of what the city school districts operate on. And on top of that, they've got a list a mile long, years waiting list at many of these schools. So it's very clear that they must be doing something right. And if they're able to do more with less, maybe we should look at them as a model for how we should reassess what the school district is teaching.
Do you support penalizing parents when kids aren't showing up in school?
I think the parents should be notified. I think they should be encouraged to participate. But also, like, I don't approve of parents being held to put in jail for a crime that the kid committed. I don't approve of the parents being put in jail for the kid being truant. That's a thing that they're doing themselves. And unfortunately, many parents don't know, but more so worse, with the crime and stuff specifically, I know parents have called me crying in tears. My child is out of control and nothing can be done. The police won't take them. The juvenile system won't do anything for them. And I'm stuck and they're destroying everything and they're decaying my life and nothing can be done. So a lot of times there are great parents, really good parents that care, that get caught up in this because the child who is an individual, okay, like they can make their own decisions for themselves and they do oftentimes against the parents' decision. But that doesn't mean that there aren't parents that are at fault here that are just letting their kids run amok or are just that type of a parent that encouraged that behavior.
So the expenditure number you used for RCSD, $1.4
billion? Approximately $1.4 billion between the state funding and the funding that comes from the city.
What should the number be?
I don't have a specific number on it, but I do believe that it is far too much for the results that we are getting. We are paying far more to get far less, and that doesn't make any sense.
If you vote to cut funding for the RCSD, are you worried that that could hurt a district that is already hurting?
Well, let me ask you a question, Evan, and let me pose this to the audience and the listeners. Every year we have less students, more than ever. Every year we have less teachers, more than ever. And every year we have less schools, more than ever. So why do we need more money, more than ever? That doesn't sound equivalent. If you've got less people, less schools, less teachers, why is there more money needed? That doesn't make sense. Then they go out here and they rename all of these schools because they get money from the state. Because essentially they're reopening a brand new school, so they get more money for that. And it's a trick that's played on the populace as if they're doing something, but it's really about money and it's about looks. Because if they actually cared, they'd fix the quality of the educational system. And I encourage anybody that actually cares about it, go check out the RCSD school meetings, and you will be appalled.
All right. let's get through as much as we can in our remaining minutes with Mark C. Williams. He's running for New York State Assembly. On the economy, abolish the state income tax?
Sounds good to me, brother.
That's what you want to do?
I would definitely push to abolish the state income tax because we are the highest tax state in the whole nation. But aside from that, you deserve to keep the money in your pocket that you make, because we've got all these other taxes. We got more than enough taxes to spend on other things. And if the state really wanted, we could do bonds, but they don't want to do that. So they're spending all your tax money, and then you have no money to put back into the economy, because economy, you know, the economy drives businesses, drives employment, which creates more money. And if we want to drive more business and more of the economy, you deserve more money in your pocket so that you can help our community and our state flourish.
All right, so abolish the state income tax. No taxes on homes for people age 55 and older. Property tax exemptions for first-time home buyers that will last for 5 years.
Yes.
So just from the state side of the revenue ledger, what are you going to cut to allow you to make those tax cuts?
So we have a ton of expenditure. Oh, man, now you're talking about the budget. I love that conversation, but I'm going to limit it. So we've got a ton of expenditures that are just ridiculous. We just put a whole bunch of money, billions of dollars, they want to call it $2.4 billion, to illegal aliens, which is not actually that much money. So that's a whole nother separate.
It's for asylum seekers.
So we can talk about the federal level and why they're labeling them as asylum seekers and if they are really asylum seekers or not as a separate question. However, anybody that applies for asylum, 96% of the asylum claims are denied. The problem is now with these people that are asylum seekers, their whole thing is 10, 15 years out until they get processed. While if somebody is a actual citizen, they can't even bring their family in. People are being denied their family to come in because it's so stacked up with people that are coming through our borders. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't care about everybody else, but I am saying that we should refocus on people that are in refugee camps. How can't we focus on refugee camp people? I can tell you some stories about refugees. I do work with them. But they're not letting refugees in here because they're prioritizing these people that are just sliding on through over that. We need a refocus. And that budget, that money, unfortunately, I know people other places need help, but my community is suffering. People are dying every day. And what we are seeing right now is a complete reprioritization of people who are not citizens of the United States over American citizens, whether you want to call them asylum seekers, illegal aliens, or whatever you want to call them. We should not be prioritizing others. When the homeless population is increasing, when the issue of the vets aren't getting addressed, when we have all of these issues right here in our city, and people that are working two jobs, struggling to take care of themselves and barely can afford to take care of their kids, are making hard decisions like, well, can I afford my rent this month or am I going to eat this week?
By the way, on asylum claims, Jay Johnson, who served as Homeland Security Secretary under President Obama, among others in, well, it looks like in the last 6 months, saying roughly 20% of people who apply for asylum are granted asylum eventually. So it is 4 out of 5 or 9. I'm not saying 96%. I will grant the point that it's the vast majority who apply for asylum do not get it. That is true.
So your numbers, you're saying, is about 80% don't get it. So, but
it's the vast majority.
Regardless, here or there, it's the vast majority of people, and you need to understand that. But now, with the way that they've got this, again, this is federal. This is not state. I just want to talk about the state. I'm sorry to have to get in this conversation to all the listeners, but this is what I've been put into. But I don't want to talk about that. We've talked about it. I don't want the money to prioritize to them. I want it to be prioritized to our citizens, the homeless, the people struggling to afford childcare, the people that are struggling to afford food and to afford housing, because the continued costs go up and up and up as our state continues to balloon the deficit.
So that's $2.4 billion that could be moved. And a couple more things before we go here. On climate, you're a big fan of nuclear energy, yes?
I am.
You want to see more nuclear energy options?
I do.
Okay.
We have Ginna right here. It's not even 15 minutes from where we are.
So you would support more nuclear. Would you support the state investing in solar wind?
I would say that right now, where we are, to maximize our potential, nuclear should be our number one focus. We have already put a large investment into solar and wind, which is fantastic. But now we need to have more consistent power at a faster rate, and that would be the way to do it, nuclear.
Also with education, you want to see more funding for charter schools, religious schools, and homeschooling options.
100%.
Okay. And when it comes to housing, you said that you want to expand home ownership opportunities. Briefly, how do you do that?
So expanding homeowner opportunities, like I said, with the tax deferral, or however you want to say it, the no taxes for 5 years on the home ownership, that helps homeowners, first-time home buyers. But I'd also like to see programs put in place. I'm not a big programs person. I'm more of a cut your taxes person and allow the everything else to work out, because the market can control itself. But I would like to see more programs for focused access to capital for people who are coming out of school that are having jobs, that are working, or people that are already have a long work history that need housing. So that's a big priority of mine.
And I didn't mention this when
Low interest loans, okay.
And I didn't mention this when we talked public safety, but let me just hit this because I think you've talked about this. Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. You think that we need to be much tougher on people who are selling drugs.
Oh, 100%.
And what's that look like?
Our drug trafficking issue is crazy. Why do we have so much law enforcement, the ATF, the DEA, the this, the that? I could name about 15 other agencies, and all of these guns and drugs are coming continuously into our community. It seems like there's some sort of a neglect there, since there are more guns and drugs out here now more than ever. Now, what does it look like? I think there should be harsher sentences on drug traffickers, on child traffickers, and on people that are selling drugs, especially the hard drugs out here in our community. We also have a problem with even the marijuana being laced, or the marijuana being throwaways that didn't pass quality tests that are now being sold that are impacting our community.
Do you want the death penalty for people who sell drugs?
We don't have the death penalty in New York State.
I know. Do you want to change that?
So there's no way to change the death penalty in New York State.
Well, I think we've learned in this country there's a lot of things that you don't think can change.
Maybe it could change, right? But, I mean, if we have somebody that's cognitively selling rancid drugs, or drugs that are killing people, like you see the people strung out, like literally bent over backwards on the street. I don't know. Many people of your listeners might not have seen that, but I see it in my community all the time. Or with flesh eaten by drugs, like that's something serious that maybe the citizens should have the option to vote on. If they decided they want it, I'd be like, okay. If they decided they don't want it, I'd be like, okay, because I'm not representing my own point of view. My job is to represent the citizens and the collective makeup of my district.
I want to thank you for coming on. Tell people the website and where they can learn more about you.
Check me out, www.marcus4rochester.com. That's marcus4rochester.com. And definitely, in November, whether you're Democrat or Independent, you can vote Republican. And I give you this consideration. Consider voting for Marcus C. Williams for 137th New York State Assembly. Thank you.
You still chairing the City of Rochester's Republican Committee?
I am still the chairman. I just got reelected the chairman of the Rochester City Committee. We're doing good work in the city to try to make a big difference.
Well, let's talk again soon.
Yes, indeed.